I spoke to a guy on the radio the other day who shares many of the same philosophical beliefs that you're espousing on the show today. And he did not believe in good and evil at all. He didn't believe in anything. He said that nothing existed of any kind, and you can't make a difference by doing anything. And I was like, well, hold on a second here. If you don't believe in good and evil, can I ask you how you're living your life? When was the last time you participated in child sacrifice? You say, oh, I've never done it. Well, when was the last time you stole something from somebody? Well, I don't do that either. Well, hold on. If you don't believe, like, in good or evil, then why aren't you doing just as much good as you are evil? See? You're not actually living by your mantra, are you? That's why it's BS, because there is something really dark and evil out there, and it's only once you are capable of recognizing that it exists, you know, through admitted documents, personal experiences, whether they be spiritual or physical experiences, I think it matters not, you can still wind up coming to the same conclusions from many, many different paths through life. You know, you've had great difference. I mean, and that, therefore, there's something that somebody called consensus reality. Oh, so many people, X amount of people perceive that that exists, therefore it exists. I don't think so. I think it's about recognition of those parts.
The old collective consciousness argument.
Yeah. And it's like the collective consciousness has powers, sure. You know, there's been plenty of experiments where I think there was in Washington, D.C., they had 3,000 people. I believe this might have been in 2003 or at some point. I don't know. But they were wanted to drop the murder rate in Washington, D.C., which is the murder capital of the world, by 30%. And the chief of the Washington police said it would take 6 feet of snow to change the murder rate like that. So, sure enough, these 3,000 people meditated, and the crime rate dropped. So, there's some power in the collective consciousness. However, they didn't stop murder altogether, right? Now,
no.
Theoretically speaking, what if we had, instead of 3,000 people accomplishing 30%, what if we had 100,000 people accomplishing 100%? Murder reduction. Would that be possible? Let's say 100,000 people on Earth every day, or 100 million, however many it takes, statistically speaking, to meditate all day into making everybody on Earth stop killing each other. Would it work? I don't think so. I think we can have a massive effect, but we can't have a total effect, because there are still people
who do not share his
motivations.
I agree with you. I mean, like, I believe in God. So I believe that the power of prayer is amazing. And that, I guess, if you could look at that as like a collective consciousness or whatever. But I still think that it's possible through the power of prayer to influence things. I'm not saying to totally turn something around.
Okay. That was my fault. I mean, sometimes I accidentally hang up on the Skype call because the mute button and the hang up are so close together. I didn't hear what you just said, but I heard the last of what you said, and I totally agree with it, that you can change things with prayer, but you can't change things in their utter essence and entirety. So, for example, do you remember that time when George Bush choked on a bagel and fell over and got a black eye or something on a coffee table? It was years ago. And everybody was laughing their asses off, absolutely happy that George Bush had a black eye for something. Now, I'm sure that there were plenty of people that were just praying diligently, night after night, "Dear Lord, please make George Bush choke on a bagel and
get a black eye on a presidential coffee table today, please, Lord. Don't ask for much. I don't ask for much. I just a little help, God. It's all I'm asking for. Just a little help. And then, boom!
Or well, we could flip that around to Obama too, or Obama as I like to call him too. I mean, I really believe they were on the verge of making a move in Syria, and it was pressure from the alternative media, people like us. But I think it was the power of prayer, or collective consciousness, all these things put undue influence, and I think that really kept us from really pulling the trigger and moving into Syria. I really do.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That could be.
And this goes to illustrate the point that you've got a whole lot of influences on reality and a whole lot of influences on perception. And what's really dangerous is people being very carte blanche about it. You know, my perception is everything that there is. Reality is everything that there is. Both those perspectives are very, very wrong because they deny tens of thousands of different other influences that are out there that occur whether or not you're aware of them, right? So let's say, for example, outside right now in my garden, there's worms churning up the soil. In the trees, there are birds eating bugs. There are spiders catching flies. There are X amount of things going on. I can't see it.
Right, yeah.
I presume
yeah, your whole backyard and that tree in your backyard is its own little ecosystem. There's no doubt about it.
Exactly. And that ecosystem occurs with or without my attention, right? However, if I do go and then pay it attention, not only do I then find out precisely what's going on in that ecosystem, but I can also change it. I can make things happen. I can plant new objects and what have you. And I think these are these two important congruences between perception and reality that I think people miss, right? They think that reality doesn't exist without perception, and some people believe perception doesn't exist without reality. I believe that neither exist without each other.
The old duality, the yin-yang thing.
I'm not sure if it's yin-yang. It's more like, you know, the body can't live without the mind. Reality can't exist without perception, nor can perception exist without reality. They're completely intertwined. And I think this is what makes life very fun and very interesting, because it's ever-changing. It's got a form of dynamic equilibrium. We can invent stuff in the physical plane that previously only existed in our mind. And I think that's about what application is. Nikola Tesla talked about it, and
oh, yeah.
He was trying to correct Thomas. Was it Thomas Edison who made the light bulb? I forget which one it was.
Thomas Edison that wanted to everything to be on direct current.
Yeah. Okay. So with alternating current, Thomas Edison, I think he electrocuted an elephant in stages, to show how deadly alternating current was. My point was that Thomas Edison, I think, had a saying that says it's 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration.
1% perspiration, right.
Yeah. And Nikola Tesla
said... Inventor's Creed.
Yeah, and Nikola Tesla said, that's BS. It's actually 99% inspiration, 1% perspiration. I'm far more inclined to agree with Nikola Tesla, because when you get a really brilliant idea, a totally out there one, and then you start putting work into it, it develops a life of its own, and it doesn't actually take an awful lot of work in order to keep it going, right? That's where the inspiration comes in. Yeah. And so these are really important things, because it doesn't matter how inspired you are, if you don't put in that 1% inspiration, you're not going to be able to create anything, right? Like, I know, let's take music, for example. I'm a musician. I've got an album out, and I've only been recording off and on for about a year with my bandmate. And I met some guys at a barbecue last weekend, One had been writing poetry for 10 years and hadn't published a damn thing. One who had been making music for 11 years and hadn't published a damn thing. Now, when I make music, when I jam, I do something that a lot of musicians don't. I record myself. I record our jams. And then,
right,
once that inspiration, once all the words and the tones and the guitar changes and what have you that we just do naturally off the top of our heads have been recorded, then we can listen back to what it is we've done. Okay, it's like the waveform collapsing, you know, the songs and the melodies and what have you come out, and you've got it recorded, and then you've got something. You've got something whole, something there that you've actually can work with. Then you write down all of these lyrics. Then you make these little notes and judges about where all the guitar tone changes are. Maybe change a few tones there. Maybe add a bridge or that kind of thing. See? You've got the inspiration that gives you your building blocks right there, but you do actually have to sit down and work at things a little bit in order to perfect them, in order to get them publishable, that kind of thing. Most artists don't do that because they feel that the inspiration
unless you're a super freak like Tesla was and so brilliant that you could do complex experiments in your mind. I mean, that would be why Tesla would be 99% inspiration and 1% perspiration.
But the thing is, it's about thinking before you do things, right? Yeah, he was absolutely brilliant, okay, because he could think about things and then mull it over in his mind and then go and do an experiment in the real world just to check that what he was thinking about in his mind was being correct, and it turns out that he was correct. But the thing is, he didn't know 100% that he was correct until he built that device that achieved that particular effect that his mind told him it could.
I'm going to use Tesla and him perceiving that in his mind and putting that experiment in his mind and then physically showing that it would work. Did his perception
create
a reality?
Collapsing the wave. Yeah, but that's called collapsing the wave function. When you can physically take things out of the perceptual realm and put them into reality by working on them, right? That's how important reality is, because you can change what other people can see. If you're thinking about something, you're only changing what you can think, what you can see in your own mind. Nobody else can see it. Nobody else can hear it unless you tell them or show them. The reason why you choose to bring things into reality, the reason why you choose to construct things, make things, or change things is because you're trying to improve the world around you, either for yourself or for others. Now, that can be done in a selfish way, where the elite will improve the world situation for themselves by seizing the issuance of all currency. They concocted a scheme, then they implemented it. It didn't mean the scheme existed without them implementing that, though.
Right, but again, that goes back to that good and evil. They had the perception to do something diabolical and evil, and then they made it a reality. They perceived
exactly it,
then they created a reality.
See? Now you just hit on the most important thing. You can perceive something and then make it a reality, okay? Not before, not during, but afterwards. Just like the observer.
Right.
The observer stops the wave functioning from having variance. This is what we're capable of doing with our actions in reality, is making things the way we want them to be and changing everything else as a result. However, again, as I reiterate, it's not magical, and it doesn't mean that reality doesn't exist or that perception is all powerful.